Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant! Bale going around and scoring for Tottenham!
And still Ricky Villa. What a fantastic run! He scored! And he's away, Aaron Lennon! Crouch! Yes!
Welcome back to another edition of the all-new, all-dangerous Wheeler Dealer Radio. We're almost at the end of the Tim Possible dream, and we're here with some hot takes to get us through the end of the season. As always, I am your host, Skip Jack, otherwise known as Greg. We've joined by some new hosts tonight. Ben is going cold turkey for his cigarettes, so he's locked in a room, not being exposed to light or podcasts. So tonight we're joined by our very own Statsby, Michael. Say hello, Michael.
What's going on, y'all?
And the big boss man of the site, the man who walks the straight and narrow, Kevin McCauley. Say hi to the people, Kevin.
So before we decided to turn on the podcast, hit the record button, just like everybody to know that we spent the first 20 minutes of our conversation before we started talking to you, talking about radical feminism and WWE. If you'd like to know what goes on behind the scenes at Cartilage Free Captain.
All you have to do is bow leave, Kevin. That's all you have to do.
I hear we have listeners in Cambodia.
Or Bolivia. Oh, I hope someone else finds that funny. Actually, I think I would rather talk about professional wrestling than Tim Sherwood, as would most of our audience, even those who hate professional wrestling. But we've got two more weeks, guys, or at least two more podcasts. So let's get started and get through the hard stuff. We lost to West Ham for the third time this season last week. Words cannot express how angry this made me. Kevin, how bad was it?
I mean, it sucked because West Ham are West Ham. But as much as I'd like to blame everything ever on Tim Sherwood, because I really don't like Tim Sherwood and I really do like most of our squad, this one wasn't his fault.
No, I mean, it was. For me, it wasn't. Clearly, the red card had screwed us up and it really messed up the way we were able to play through the rest of the game. But I think that's also a squad, and this predates Sherwood, but they didn't know what to do. They were a team without a plan.
No, that sounds like Tottenham Hotspur.
Yes, but that sounds like Tottenham Hotspur under Andre Villas-Boas and his successor, Tim Sherwood.
And Harry Redknapp and Wande Ramos and Martin Yole.
But particularly this year, this team has never had a plan B. They didn't know what to do. It was terrible. Michael, do you have any stats that can demonstrate how awful this game was?
I mean, West Ham had 9 shots from the danger zone. We had 2. I have it by expected goals about 1.8 to 0.7 against West Ham. That's horrible.
West Ham has Carlton Cole. We have Christian Eriksen.
Carlton
Cole is one. I think he's in either the top. I think he's in the top 10 for non-penalty goals per 90 minutes this season. Football makes no sense.
Surely he has not cleared some manner of statistical measure to breach that, like minutes played or like is it over a minuscule amount of minutes played?
No, he's started a number of games. He's been like a dead-eye shooter this year. It is bizarre.
I went in 2012. I went to see Spurs in London. And I saw them play West Ham, and it was a 0-0 draw at White Hart Lane. But the thing I always remember about it is Carlton Cole got behind the defense, was one-on-one with Aurelio Gomez, who had the sun coming directly into his eyes. He was actually wearing a baseball hat because it was so bright that day. And it is the most assured, confident, least worrying thing I've ever seen Gomez do, just smother that ball at his feet. It was not even a troubling shot. That's how bad Carlton Cole is.
So, Greg, I got a question. Can you make a clip of Danger Zone for when we've got Mike on the show? I feel like every time he says it, we just got to play the Kenny Loggins clip.
Lana! Lana!
Or we can do that.
We could do that. I'll see what we can do about Danger Zone. Yeah. Or we could just have Michael say that.
I don't know. I'm partial to Kenny Loggins.
Oh, well, who isn't? That's really bad. I don't know if there's a whole lot else to say about this game. We got an early red card and it all fell apart from there.
The one thing I would say is that we weren't good before the red card. we were playing on the counter against West Ham for no reason, and we were doing it badly.
All right, Michael, I'm going to let you in on a secret. Our manager sucks, and we never come out with an effective game plan. The only game, oddly enough, that I think we came out with a plan for, and we still got burnt early on, was the Arsenal game, the league Arsenal game. That's the only game where it looked like Tim Sherwood had the team doing something that was working. Like, for the first 10 minutes, like for the first few minutes, it was a little touch and go. But after that, whatever he told that team to do was working. But anyway, that
is this a segue into the title segment of the show?
That's a great segue, Kevin. We were having a conversation about maybe how we should handle this episode. What do you think the title for this episode is going to be?
I think that we should. This should be the Tim Sherwood burn book. We had a little conversation before the show started about how Tim Sherwood's probably going to be relieved of his duties at some point after the final game of the season, whether that's the day after, a week, whatever. I'm thinking by the time we do the next episode of this show, Tim Sherwood will not be the manager of Tottenham Hotspur. And once he's gone, I don't really want to just sit around and rip the dude. I want to look forward, you know, talk about what we've got to look forward to and who we might hire. And I don't know, maybe we'll even have a new manager by the time we do the next episode of this show. So why don't we just get all of our negative feelings about Tim Sherwood out so we don't have to say awful things about him after this.
So you don't think we're going to sit around telling our children about the halcyon years of the Sherwood era?
No, I think it's highly unlikely.
Tim Sherwood's awful, and I think it's something we can't understate. I think this team has succeeded in spite of him as opposed to because of him. I think he maybe deserves enough credit for not turning this team into a complete disaster. Whether that's incidental or due to his hard work, I can't say. But beyond that, he's terrible and I want him gone.
So in the context of this last game, West Ham game that we were discussing, what I want to know is if Tim Sherwood is our former youth academy, I guess it wasn't director, but he was the under-21 coach, technical director. He's bringing all these young players through to the first team. We've got Alex Pritchard on the bench. We've got Milos Veljkovic, who hasn't gotten a start yet. We've got Nabil Bentaleb, who he was kind of criticized for playing while games are still, mattered. But now games don't matter. So, why aren't we playing him? Why aren't we playing these guys?
How about this?
If the season's over and he's the guy who's trying to integrate the youngsters into the first team, why isn't he fucking doing it?
How about this? He even acknowledges that Bentaleb was playing out of position. Why not play him in position now? Let him play as sort of either a runner or a more advanced passer, whichever sort of suits his skill set, or certainly either of those skills has to fix better than him as a DM.
Yeah, well, this is the problem with Sherwood, is he is saying now that Bentaleb was out of position, but he played Bentaleb as a DM with Sandro ahead of him.
Yeah.
He just says whatever is going to get a response. It's that deep ignorance combined with a sort of profound self-serving, constant a constant just looking out for number one in the moment. I just hate him so much.
There's this,
you guys.
To be fair to Sherwood, like, he's been thrown in the deep end of the pool, and you've got to have a certain level of ego if you ever want to be a player, let alone a manager. And I get that he probably would like to keep this job, but you're right. He just keeps saying things that sound like excuses.
Okay, but the things he's saying it's not the things that you would say if you want to keep your job. It's the things you would say if you've said, fuck this job, I'm going to start planning for the next job before I leave my current job.
Which, to be fair, is the reality he faces. So,
the reality he ends up facing is every single chairman in English football noticing how disrespectful and self-serving this guy's being, and not giving him a job.
I mean, come on. I mean, English chairmen have hired worse idiots who say dumber things than him. I mean, well, they've
hired idiots who say dumber things, but not who are more self-serving.
I don't know about that, especially if you start hitting the lower tiers of English football. I'm kind of morbidly curious to see what his press conferences in League One and the Championship are like next year.
Someone on the internet I read suggested that Tim Sherwood was basically like conceived in a tube to be the next manager of Newcastle.
I mean, sounds about right.
I mean, my God.
I mean, watching him burn Mike Ashley over and over would be just brilliant.
I mean, that would be insane. Is Mike Ashley dumb enough to do that? But he hired Alan Pardew to an 8-year contract based on a good scouting system.
He hired Joe Kinnear, who is recommending Newcastle sign players that were already on their books.
As well as Johan Kebabs.
Fuck.
Maybe he just likes Middle Eastern food. And had it on his mind.
God, I hope Newcastle hires Tim Sherwood. How great would that be? I know I said 5 seconds ago that I hope he doesn't get a job, but Mike Ashley is worse than Tim Sherwood.
They deserve each other.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be real. They deserve each other. The Newcastle fans don't deserve him. But if Mike Ashley, sponsored by Wonga, can hire, like, Sherwood FC, that would be about perfect.
So this weekend, I would really love to see us do what Man United did today. You know, Man United threw James Wilson out there for his debut, scored twice on his debut, gave Tom Lawrence what I believe was if not his first team debut, definitely his Premier League debut, put Jan Oblak back in the team. Why don't we do this? You know, the game doesn't matter. Let's acknowledge the game doesn't matter, and let's give 90 minutes in the Premier League to Alex Pritchard and Milos Veljkovic and Nabil Bentaleb.
See what they can do.
Yeah, absolutely.
But at this point, I don't understand what – the flip side of this is I don't understand what Sherwood's game here is. What does he have to gain by playing the veteran? It's like they don't seem to like him very much. And at the same time, like, he's not going to be here next year. So it's like he doesn't care if they play. I don't understand the percentage because it's not like – he's going to get a job based on whether or not Spurs make the Europa League or not. No one really cares about that, including Spurs fans.
And I feel like playing these kids would endear him to championship chairman.
Yes. It's like, oh, he'll develop talent, which should be his strongest suit for a championship or League One job.
Yeah, like this is the point of hiring a Tim Sherwood, a guy who is a U21 coach, has a reputation for bringing youth talent up through the ranks. You hire him because you think that he can mold and develop your young talent. Why doesn't he, thing to put on his resume, fucking start Alex Pritchard and Veljkovic and say, like, you know, these are the guys I brought through to the first team. These guys are first teamers at Tottenham because of me.
That would be, you know, highly rational and logical. And Tim Sherwood, as in my take on it, is that Tim Sherwood is the character that Harry Redknapp played to the media, except he means it.
Yeah, because Harry Redknapp is actually a decent manager and a fairly intelligent human being.
But Tim Sherwood, I think, actually is that caricature of sort of a media savvy English manager.
Media savvy. What about Tim Sherwood is media savvy?
Well, in that he can generate a reaction.
Well, I mean, you know, he could pull his pants off and slap Henry Winter in the face with his cock. That would get a reaction. I mean, that's not exactly hard. I mean,
phrasing.
I don't think that's the issue with what I just said.
I just want to drop one more Tim Sherwood thing. I've got a couple, but the thing I wanted to mention, because I was looking this up and I was collecting my stats, is so Tim Sherwood has now played Nasser Chadli in center midfield for 300 minutes in the English Premier League.
Nice.
In those 300 minutes, Nasser Chadli has attempted 3 tackles. Do you want to guess how many he won?
Attempted?
Yep.
Wow. None.
One.
Ugh.
And it's not like the way that Chadli plays, you can say, oh, well, that's because, you know, he's excellent positionally and, you know, defensively, and he's always sitting in the right spot, and, like, you know, guys never take him on. Like, that's obviously not what's happening.
But it's just absolutely not part of his skill set.
Like, if you were to look at
it, he doesn't do it. There's nothing wrong with that. He's a wide forward.
Here's what I don't get about Chadli. There's two things here. One, he had his best game for us on the wing. He ran over, like, Benfica, who are going to be in the Europa League final.
He started that game in the center, and then I think it was Kane who came on as a substitute.
He put
Eriksen in the middle to push Chadli out to the wing. What kind of fucking bizarro match was that?
It's the first time is that the first and only time Tim Sherwood has brought on Christian Eriksen to play in the center and pushed Chadli out to the wing? And then, like, during this 10 minutes is, like, the best 10 minutes of the Tim Sherwood era, and he never does it again.
So here's the thing. Not only does we have demonstrable proof under Tim Sherwood that Chadli is best on the wing, but the thing is, like, the only acceptable reason for putting Chadli in a center midfield, the only two acceptable reasons are you're playing a matchup game, which he hasn't been, or you have an injury crisis, because Chadli can play center midfield respectively. Like, if you've got an injury crisis, I don't have a problem with that. Neither of these things has happened. He is not playing in the center midfield because of an injury crisis. He is not playing there because, oh, Tim Sherwood was outsmarting the other manager in their game of three-dimensional chess. He's just doing it because, I don't know, he thinks it makes him look clever. It's like you give a kid Football Manager and they try to, like, play Hugo Lloris up top just to see what would happen. I mean,
yeah, like, I totally, in Football Manager, I invented a random-ass, like, awful 3-4-3 that would just get demolished in real life, but it's really fun in Football Manager, and I score lots of goals.
Here's a question.
Tim Sherwood is like that, only in real life.
If Tim Sherwood were Tottenham's manager 2 or 3 years ago, what position would he have played Gareth Bale in?
Keeper.
Oh, God.
Striker. He would have played him as striker.
Yeah.
Yep, that's absolutely
right. What position does he play Luka Modric in? Probably left wing.
Center back.
Guy got them crosses in.
Oh, God. I mean, at least... What are the things Tim Sherwood has done well?
Starts Harry Kane.
Played Nabil Bentaleb.
Understands that Christian Eriksen needs to get the ball. So automatically an improvement over AVB.
Let's see what else. So we've got three things there.
Getting Danny Rose off.
Has not done a weird mismatch like... Playing a high line without pressing.
You know what? He threw a ball at Bakary Sagna, which at the time it made me angry, but now it is kind of funny.
Mike, you had something?
I mean, he allowed me to learn that English people don't call a vest a vest. They call it a gilet.
Let's analyze. Let's break that one down for a second, England. So, basically what you're saying is the French won, because you can't even call it a vest. So, Britons might never be slaves, as Rule Britannia is fond to remind us, but you are culturally subservient to the French, apparently. So, good one.
I don't know. I feel like English would be a better language if more of our words were adopted from French than from German.
Yeah, but our cursing would be less interesting.
Yeah, that's the one thing about German is a fairly ugly language, except for the swearing, which is just absolutely brilliant.
English is still a language built for brutality. Now that we've alienated all our English listeners, and we haven't even accused anyone of belonging to the EDL this week.
Should be noted, though, that's a really good segue.
What's the segue for, Kevin?
We were going to talk about... We had a mailbag question. I guess we could do like a weird out of order thing where we do the mailbag now. Now that you're mentioning the EDL, the player that I accused of being EDL supporter, or not really. I mean, I just made fun of him because he follows the EDL on Twitter, playing in the championship playoffs. And I think we had a mailbag question about that. If we want to,
let's address that now since we've hammered that round peg into a square hole. Bailout asks, who do you think will win the championship playoff places, and who do you want to win?
So I really do like Derby County. I think Steve McLaren's kind of got a raw deal with his recent stuff, and people made fun of him for the Dutch accent, and Steve McLaren's a good coach. And everybody knows about Will Hughes, but Darby's got some other really good midfielders. Like, they might not even start Will Hughes because Craig Bryson and Jeff Hendrick are really, really good players. I think looking at Darby's squad and just with their coach, their youth system, their fans, they've got a really good chance of staying up if they win the playoffs.
That would be a big change from the last time they were in the top division.
Yeah, like obviously one of the worst Premier League teams ever.
I just don't want it to be Harry's Galacticos down at QPR. I think it would make me so happy if they somehow managed to not get out of the championship with a wage bill bigger than Dortmund's.
I'd like to see Derby move on. I think that Wigan didn't deserve to be relegated last year. Wigan took a lot of hard luck. They had one of the best danger zone shot differences of any club relegated in the last 5 years. And so they're the other club I'd be rooting for in that playoff.
Yeah, and I feel like they can stay up if they go up.
It'll. Yeah. I think we can all agree it's probably a good crop of teams joining the Premier League next year.
Well, Burnley's going to go right back down unless they spend a lot of money, which they're not going to do. They've got a very conservative board, which is not bad. Burnley's interesting because their manager, Sean Dyche, has done a really good job with kind of a crappy squad. And I guess the fear is that he's going to get canned when they get off to a horrible start and they're, you know, in 20th at Christmas, 10 points from safety, even though it's totally not going to be his fault. I'm hoping that Burnley, if they're going to do the yo-yo thing, which is extremely likely, that they kind of just let Sean Dyche ride it out, because even if they finish on like 15, 20 points, it's not going to be his fault. And they probably will. Whoever comes up from the playoffs is going to have a much, much, much better chance of staying up than Burnley.
Well, the thing that I'll say about that is, like, I never thought Palace would stay up, and yet here we are. So.
Well, Palace weren't going to stay up. They made some incredible signings in the January window.
They made it happen is what I'm saying. Like, you know, so I'm not necessarily going to write anybody off, but you're right. I think Burnley's less.
No, just based on the way that their board has functioned, I find it highly unlikely that they're going to go, like, if they're 19th and 20th at Christmas, find it highly unlikely that they're going to go drop 10, 15 million in the January transfer window.
Miracles can still happen, I suppose. Just look at next week when we lose Tim Sherwood. So, dragging this train back onto its tracks, there's still some Spurs stuff to talk about before we lower our IQs with the commentariat's questions.
Ooh, damn.
Yeah, that's what you get here on Wheeler Dealer Radio. Complete lack of respect for our listening audience.
Yeah, condescension for the audience. That's wonderful.
I am an elite Northeasterner. So there was an article in the Evening Standard today saying that Lewis Holtby would find out his fate this week. Now, I wrote a very social media friendly article about this, and in that article, and I'll reiterate my thing here, I think this is bullshit. I think Lewis Holtby would like to know his fate, but I can't imagine any manager is not going to want to say on what Spurs do with Lewis Holtby, no matter who it is. So I think I think Holtby's not going to hear anything for it, because I don't think – am I most optimistic? I don't think we're going to get a manager – actually on the team for at least 2 weeks, if not longer, where they're signed and actually making personnel moves. So I think Holtby's not going to find out for at least a month, if not longer, as to whether or not he's staying around.
Kevin? Yeah, so what do we think about Lewis Holtby? We talked about a little bit about this last week, but I guess I'm curious what Mike thinks. How do we feel about Lewis?
You don't want to hear what I think, Kevin. You don't want to get my opinion on Lewis Holtby. Get my hot take.
You're just gonna throw hashtags at me. I want the facts.
The thing with Holtby, I mean, just I've been collecting my passing and defensive numbers, and I mentioned this the first time I was on the pod, that Holtby has attempted three times more through balls per minute than any other Tottenham player. And he just doesn't – he just didn't fit under AVB's system. He was trying things that didn't fit in the tiny compressed space that AVB inexplicably wanted his team attacking in.
That's very surprising to me, because just watching Lewis Holtby, I see – like I've seen him for Spurs at least. It seems – he seems like more of a, you know, recycler of possession, like a very – It, that was the, always the weird thing to me, is he always looked to me like an AVB-type player, like a guy who would help you keep the ball above all else. So I'm surprised to hear that.
Well, on the AVB-type player side, he also averaged about 4.5 tackles and interceptions per 90, which is the kind of number you would expect from a – not a defensive center mid, you know, your Sandros, people like that. For I think Fernandinho's around 6, but it is way above what any kind of attacking – center midfielder you'd expect from. Christian Eriksen is in the 2 to 2.5 range. So he's a guy who's going to win possession back, who's going to fight to win possession back. But he's also trying things. And I think there's just too much potential there to sell Lewis Holtby at the diminished price that he'd get right now. I don't see Levy doing it.
I don't think we're going to get rid of him, but there's just part of me that's... What really bothers me about Holtby isn't that I think he's bad. I think we're just going to waste playing time on him, and he's not good enough for what we want out of him. And
yeah, we should be using that time on players like Tom Carroll instead.
You know what? You're right. We should be.
What?
We should be. Tom Carroll has more to offer.
CM Punk what.gif?
Yeah, exactly. So here's the thing. Tom Carroll plays a role that we don't currently have anyone doing on this team. He's a deep-lying passer. He's probably, at least in theory, does the kind of thing that Modric used to do. Probably not to that – definitely not to that level. But he plays a role that we don't currently have on this team. Lewis Holtby's role on this team is worse Christian Eriksen. Whether that's in the middle or on the left, he's bad Christian Eriksen. Now, if he's content with being a super sub, God love you, Lewis. Like, you could stick around. But until
I'm willing
then,
to. I didn't like Lewis Holtby playing central midfield at Schalke, but if what Mike's saying about his tackles, interceptions, through balls is correct, and I assume it is, I assume he didn't make it up, then. In theory, Lewis Holtby could play that role. And I didn't like him in it at Schalke, but he wasn't awful.
We tried that a couple times at Spurs. Now, the problem with Spurs is we keep trying people in roles occasionally, like Sigurdsson, and it's like moderately successful, and then it either doesn't work and we stop it, or we just never try it again.
And when we decide to try new things and stick with them, it's insane shit, like Scott Parker as a box-to-box midfielder and... who's taking shots and trying through balls, and Moussa Dembele holding.
Ugh.
That's the one insane thing we tried that we stuck with.
God.
Fuck AVB forever.
Oh, AVB's the worst.
There you go, Greg.
Oh my God, thank you. I got
this. Whenever people bring up like, oh well, we should have stuck with AVB because look at what happened. Like Tim Sherwood sucks. It's like you're right that Tim Sherwood sucks, but the guy he replaced thought that Scott Parker should be an attacking midfielder and Moussa Dembélé should be a holder.
So, you know the other thing
and
about
thought
this?
That Eric Lamela wasn't good enough to play in the Premier League.
Ugh. Yeah.
So, you know the other thing about, like, we say that, and I think there are two things people need to keep in mind about AVB. Sherwood's gotten incredibly lucky, but a lot of the goals we have scored are because Tim Sherwood has let these players free a little bit. That never would have happened under AVB. We would have keep playing in the super compressed system. But more importantly, the narrative surrounding this team, if we had AVB, can you imagine what that would be like? Like the drama that we would be sort of like living in right now? I mean, how bad and ugly and messy that would be. I mean, I'm not saying that should have determined it, but like we all hate Sherwood. We all think Sherwood's a disaster, but we all know he's gone in a week, like for all intents and purposes. Like, the drama around AVB, the gaudy self-serving comments he would make following that. It's just – I'm just so glad we don't have to deal with that. We're going to cut ties. It's going to be quick. No one's going to give us unnecessary amounts of grief for it, and we're going to hire a new manager, and we're all probably going to like him a lot better than the guy we fired.
And the degree to which somebody like Frank DeBoer or Mauricio Pochettino is going to have to suck for me to like seriously criticize them is huge, because I'm almost certain that either half dozen other guys that we could hire are going to be a huge improvement over what we've had over the last couple of years.
This is going to be, I think, whoever we hire is going to be, unless it's Rafa Benitez.
I don't like Rafa Benitez, and I hope we don't hire him, but he's better than Andre Villas-Boas.
No, he is, but what I'm about to say is, unless it's Rafa Benitez, whoever we hire is going to have more unified fan support than anyone since Martin Yole.
Yeah.
So I want to say something to alienate both our listeners and especially Greg.
Oh, I thought you were going to say we're alienating both our listeners.
Both our listeners, yes. Yes. hey there, guys. So the analogy for this Spurs team right now is absolutely the 2011 Red Sox.
You are the worst thing in the world, and I hate you, and I'm going to be a right, Chelsea though. Fan now. You are right.
This team This team failed to – so the Boston Red Sox are – There's a certain subset of listeners who don't care about baseball and don't know who the Boston Red Sox are. Then there's another subset of our listeners who hate the Boston Red Sox.
Yes.
I, on the other hand, am a huge Boston Red Sox fan. Hey, guys.
Ugh.
So the Boston Red Sox had this hugely expensive team that had this horrible collapse in 2011, ending hilariously on a drop line drive catch on the last day of the season.
I was there for that game, saw it in person, completely awesome.
I can't – it was hilarious.
Yes.
God, watching that final day of the season on TV was an all-time great sports experience. Anyway, continue.
In 2012, in the offseason between the two seasons – before 2012, the Red Sox attempted to hire Dale Swaim, perfectly normal, competent, maybe not that great, but normal new manager. Their owners ditched him, said, no, we're not going to hire him on the GM's recommendation. We're instead going to hire Bobby Valentine, who is a fucking crazy person.
I mean, the best comparison I can think of for Bobby Valentine is a less competent Harry Redknapp.
No, Bobby Valentine is Ian Holloway.
No, he's Mark Hughes.
No, because he's like a nut job. He's loud.
Good point.
I think Bobby Valentine is Ian Holloway.
But he also thinks he's the smartest man in the room. I think he's AVB if ABV quit trying.
So he's Tim Sherwood.
Oh, my God.
But the Red Sox under Valentine were the biggest disaster you've ever – like a New York Mets-level disaster at that kind of money.
So after this disastrous Red Sox season, there were all these articles that came out about the toxic dressing room atmosphere where like guys were scheduled to play, but they said that they were hurt and then sat in the clubhouse and played video games and ate fried chicken and drank beer.
Yep.
So, it's going to be, and then of course the postscript is they fire him, they hire a new guy and they're good.
They fire him. They hire a new guy. They trade away a couple of players. I do think that there is a case to be made for this Spurs offseason in just dumping a few guys to change the dynamic.
Lewis Holtby.
You want to change a few things.
Lewis Holtby.
Paulinho.
I'm fine with that, too.
And then they won the World Series the next year. So my point in this is that the Spurs are going to win the Premier League title next year and possibly the Champions League, even though we haven't qualified for it.
Spurs are going to win the World Series next year.
Oh, that'll come through. That'd be nice. Now that we've alienated all of our listeners, there's another rumor that came up today, and that is us being connected with Roberto Martinez as our next manager. Apparently Daniel Levy wants him and is targeting him. Now, I think let's take a look at this from a realistic perspective first. That's not going to happen. Martinez stayed at Wigan way past the point of reason.
I'm only – okay, so before you keep going, I'm going to throw out one little caveat. I think it's extremely unlikely that this is going to happen, but I could foresee a situation in which Roberto Martinez is like, hey, we can't get Lukaku again. Like, we really need to spend a little bit of money on a striker. And, you know, Barry's out of contract. We really need to give him a – you know, some good wages to say. And Ken Wright's like, nah, man, I'm broke. Fuck this.
See,
and Martinez gets pissed.
I agree with you to an extent, but I think it would have to be worse than that. I think it would have to be like, hey, Roberto, we're selling Ross Barkley and we're buying Steven Ireland.
We're selling Ross Barkley and we're not giving you any transfer funds.
Yeah, I think it would have to be that bad, and I don't see it being that bad. Like, he stuck with Whelan way past... Like, I mean, the fact that he won the FA Cup his last season kind of gave it a sort of retrospective narrative sense to it.
Well, not the thing is, though, he was a Wigan player. And not
that's
just a,
true. That's
and,
true.
And, like, a very good player for them, like, a very important, you know, helped them reach heights that they'd never reached before as a player. And he was a Swansea player, too, before he left them. So, I mean, there might be something different there. Roberto Martinez was... a lot of people thought he would go to Wigan before he did. That, you know, the reason he didn't get hired before he did is because he just wasn't ready for it yet. So he actually has a connection to that club that runs deeper than, you know, him not wanting to screw them over and leave early.
So, but I still think that...
Having said all that, we're not going to hire Roberto Martinez.
I mean, there's a level of professionalism here. He's not going to leave us after one season unless Ken Wright just hacks him off badly. So I don't think we're going to get him. I do think Levy is probably doing his due diligence in sounding him out because I think he would be a good hire.
Or it's just like a prank war. Like, do you think he just he's just like crank calling Bill Kenwright just because he thinks he's a dick?
I'd like him to.
I mean, maybe that's where that rumor came from. Like somebody, you know, some like fucking intern at Finch Farm was looking at the phone call logs and were like, Daniel Levy called Bill Kenwright yesterday. I bet it was about Roberto Martinez. And I'm sure it was just, you know, Dan Levy like, hey, Bill, is your refrigerator running?
Yeah, that's what he does. He's like, hey, would you like to buy Raphael Vandervaart for £5 million?
I assume Daniel Levy spends his entire day calling people, offering players to be sold for exorbitant prices and offering $3 million for Ross Barkley in transfers in the hopes that he'll find one person who will accept.
Yeah, just like the one day some chairman is just like on a bender, like his wife left him and team's about to get relegated and he's just like, fuck this. And yeah, whatever, you can have him for $5 million.
Seems legit.
One thing I will say with Roberto Martinez is that it would be really nice to have a manager who does tactical things game to game that makes sense.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be great?
Guys, I don't know what you're talking about. That would never happen here.
This season, so Manchester City played this two-striker set. And last year in the FA Cup final against Wigan, Wigan ran out three defenders against, so they didn't know what to do. Then in the FA Cup this year again, they ran up against Wigan again. And Wigan ran out three defenders against them. They didn't know what to do about that when they went 2-on-3. This season in the Premier League... Roberto Martinez this last week played three defenders against Man City and kept it close. Only one other team in one other game played a three-defender set against City. It was Aston Villa early in the year. They won 3-2. No one else did it.
It was a good idea. Like, on one hand, it was a very good idea for Martinez to do that against Manchester City. On the other hand, you had Jagielka, who is coming back from injury, who absolutely looked injured. Alcaraz, who is just simply not good enough to start for a top-half Premier League side at all by any stretch of the imagination. And John Stones, who looked like he had never heard of a back three in his life.
It was working. It was not working that badly until Aguero came off injured. I mean, Aguero's shot was incredible. It was a beautiful individual play. Once he came off injured, Pellegrini made the tactical response, and then Martinez responded by going back to a back four, and City were in control.
But I think he made that response after, like, 60 minutes in after another goal. It wasn't like at halftime Martinez made that switch, and he made that switch I don't think it was tactical. I think it was because Jagielka couldn't play anymore.
That's fair.
Anyway, Roberto Martinez is cool, and we're not going to get him.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would have been nice if we could get him, but we won't. Let's sigh. So, ending out the Sherwood era, we have the Aston Villa game. How excited are you guys for this game?
There's your answer.
Oh, that's it. See, I think the West Ham game was the last game I was going to get excited about, mostly because I like to beat West Ham. And
mostly because fuck West Ham.
Yeah, up West Ham's ass. Like, seriously, with the barbed wire pole, they're the worst. And I actually, one of the reasons I'm maddest at Sherwood, even though AVB is just as responsible for this, he has ruined cup final jokes for at least a year. And they're some of my favorite jokes to make to troll other teams' fans.
And I'm never going to forget Mechanic's awful story about the West Ham bar.
It's kind of sad when you consider that they live up to that stereotype, because you know probably most West Ham fans are cool dudes, but I haven't met any.
You know they're mostly cool dudes, but I haven't met any.
So they're probably not. I'm just being nice. They're probably all members of the EDL. How about that? So do we have any thoughts on Villa? Their big game is this week, not this weekend. So
yeah, I feel bad for Paul Lambert because I think he's a good dude and a solid manager, but he's probably going to lose his job here.
Paul Lambert. I think Paul Lambert has kind of earned whatever he gets at the end of the season.
Paul Lambert is going to land well with one of these Premier League teams that gets relegated, perhaps Fulham. Perhaps he goes back to Norwich, although I don't think they like him very much. And he's probably going to bring him back up, and, you know, he's going to do well. And Villa's probably going to hire, I don't know, bring back Martin O'Neill. Maybe they'll be able to poach Pulis. I don't know.
I don't think Pulis is going anywhere. I mean, he stayed at Stoke for a while. I mean, who's going to hire him off the back of Stoke, to be fair? But he stayed there for a while, really built them up. I don't know. I think Pulis is going to stay at Palace.
The thing I don't get with Villa is they've got this – there should be tons of revenue there. And their wage bill is roughly equal to Sunderland's.
Well, the thing is, they overspent for a very long time. They paid absolutely ridiculous wages, and they've slashed it big time to compensate for the long period of time in which they were spending above their means.
And I mean, don't forget, there was a time where it looked like Villa was going to be that team that cracked the top four monopoly. And we were the ones who ended up doing it.
And they were paying guys like Ashley Young and James Milner just absolutely outrageous wages for a club of their size. Iqbal Nahor still makes insane wages for a club of that size. And they had a lot of other just like shit players that were on like 50, 60 grand a week.
Kesky.
Yeah, exactly.
Weren't they in fourth for like most of the season that before we made the Champions League?
Yeah, they were in fourth for a while. I think they finished fifth or sixth.
Ugh.
Back when Young and Milner were balling. Back when Ashley Young was like the great young hope for England. Jesus.
Think about that. Let's all take a moment.
Well, now it's Townsend, so.
No, now it's I think it's Lallana this week.
Well, it's Ross Barkley.
Well, England's in trouble then. I'd say the Americans overhype their prospects too, but there's just less of us to get crazy about it. So
Aston Villa are just like the most inoffensive club. There's nothing that I love or hate about Aston Villa.
Their fans aren't associated with any sort of strain of hooliganism.
They're there and they're okay, and I have no problem with them.
I love that my wife assumed that their name was Aston Villa. They were Spanish.
Oh, that's awesome. They should start doing that. Paul Lambert should coach Aston Villa.
The one thing I do love about Aston Villa is that the SB Nation blog for the site 7500 to Holt is very good, and the people that run that site are I've met most of them in person. The three managers, Aaron, Robert, and Kirsten, I have met in person, and they're super awesome people. And another one of the guys, Jack, writes Bundesliga stuff for us at .com, and Andrew and Matt are, and Gareth are good follows on Twitter, fun guys. So that's my one decent thing about Aston Villa is that the all of the people on their SB Nation blog are really awesome people.
Yeah, Aston Villa is nice and inoffensive and won't threaten us anytime soon, so let's keep it that way.
Yeah, only other thing I have to say about this game is please just start Pritchard and Velkovich, please.
That's crazy talk. Why would we do that? Why would we do something that makes any kind of fucking sense with Tim Sherwood in charge? I mean,
well, God, I'm going to be so pissed if he's not gone on Monday.
We're heading for a Tim Sherwood lineup after a game where we lost. So he's going to change things. When we win, he keeps the same lineup. He's going to change things. No one knows what comes next.
And I haven't mentioned Zeki Friars on the show as I've been harping about the youth. We have no reason to start Yunus Kabul and Michael Dawson right now. Please, let's do a Kirakesh and Friars center back pairing.
We have no reason. We have no reason to start Danny Rose at this point.
Well, I don't. Yeah, we could start.
Let's start Zeki Friars over him.
And I mean, I guess why I was going to say Harry Winks too, but I think the day after. This game is when the U18 playoff game against Everton is. So we might want to play him in that game, and I understand. But let's just play some fucking kids.
Ugh. So speaking of games that matter, I mean, because this game this Sunday is clearly very important to us. Liverpool played an entertaining game this week. I like to call it the miracle at Selhurst Park.
I want to give Yannick Bolasie a big hug.
I mean, first of all, it warmed the cockles of my heart to see that after everyone talking about how the neutrals, i.e. mainstream American soccer journalists, wanted Liverpool to win the title, basically the entire internet was reveling in Schadenfreude on Twitter after that game. Watching avowed cannibalistic racist Luis Suarez cry at the end of that game was incredible. Watching them self-destruct in the opposite of their final in Istanbul a few years ago was even more incredible. It was amazing. And the fact that they lost because they were so dead set on erasing goal differential makes me so happy. I know we don't have much left to warm our hearts as Spurs fans right now, but God, that game did it for me.
You guys might have seen me on Twitter. It was response to the student Kartik, who's the guy who started EPL Talk, who's actually really, I know him, he's a really nice guy, but he says, as a human being, you have to feel for Luis Suarez. And it's like, what a crock of shit. He's a racist and he bites people. Why am I feeling bad for him? Because he works hard when he plays soccer? Are you fucking serious?
He's the worst. Everyone forgets Luis Suarez is a piece of crap.
Has anyone read the FA report? Like, Liverpool fans just spit over and over, oh, ever lie, there's no proof. Like, fucking read it. Nobody's read it. Nobody who says this has read the report. There's no ambiguity at all. Just because there's not a camera directly on Suarez's lips, there's zero ambiguity here. That Patrice Evra gives his testimony, this is what the conversation was. Luis Suarez gives his testimony, this is what the conversation was. And then they have somebody who's like a lip-reading video analyst expert, you know, try to figure out what these guys are saying without hearing either of their testimony. And the video expert and lip reading experts, what they decide is that basically what Patrice Evra said lines up perfectly with the video. And what Patrice Evra said, Luis Suarez said, was, I kicked you because you're black. Not just that he, you know, he spat out a slur or that Evra maybe misheard a slur. It was, hey, why did you kick me? I kicked you because you're black.
So, you know,
there's no ambiguity. It's not like so people say, oh, why does John Terry get fewer, you know, game suspension? Why do people forgive John Terry? Because, okay, so John Terry's a fucking idiot and probably did say a racial slur. But there, it was, you know, it was just like a blurt. It was just, you know, that could have been somebody heard that wrong or just like he screwed up and said something he didn't mean. There's no, when you say I kicked you because you're black, there's no ambiguity there. You can't say, oh, he didn't really mean to say that or he didn't know what it meant. Yes, he knew what it meant. He knew exactly what he was saying.
My favorite thing is Liverpool fans will defend it with, oh, but his grandmother's black. He'd never say something like that. Well, first of all, in the world of Donald Sterling, I think we can agree cognitive dissonance is a factor here.
Yeah, are we done? I think with Donald Sterling, we can be done saying like, oh, well, he has black friends or he has black family members. After Donald Sterling told his black girlfriend not to associate with black people.
But what if the reason he was crying on the field wasn't that Liverpool's title hopes went out in smoke? What if he just realized his grandmother was black?
That's so awful.
It was just either overcome with, like, hate or regret.
I'd also like to remind everybody.
But this is the problem.
I feel like I forgot. One more thing, real quick, and then you can
go. Yeah, go. Go. Sorry.
The captain of Liverpool, the guy everyone says, oh, is a great servant to English football and the guy who deserves the title – Let's remind everyone, punched a DJ for not playing Phil Collins.
You know, the only thing I regret about Liverpool not winning the title is that they can't have a victory celebration where someone might play Phil Collins.
Like, every single sports team has awful people on it. There have been awful people that have played for Tottenham Hotspur that I've supported, no doubt. None of them have ever punched a DJ for not playing Phil Collins. And none of them have ever told someone, I kicked you because you're black.
Well, you'll never walk alone, Kevin. Michael.
My issue with the whole, like, the Suarez and the racism thing is that there's just such an issue that we have to say that someone is in his heart racist. And this just distracts from the problem, which is that he did a racist thing.
Yeah, I don't know if Luis Suarez is racist. I don't care. He racially abused someone.
Exactly. And if he did it because he thought it would help him win a football match, that doesn't make him a better person.
Yeah, even if he's not racist at all and thought, I'm just going to say this awful thing to throw this guy off, you're still a horrible person who is racially abusing someone.
Yeah. It's the thing that you do. Jay Smooth has a fantastic video blog on this that everyone should watch.
Guys, this is a great conversation about something that happened two seasons ago.
You can trash talk and screw with people without racially abusing them. Go look up any stories about Michael Jordan and Larry Bird's trash talk. It never got racial, but they fucked with people's heads.
Go look up the majority of American college football these days. I mean, come on.
But to turn this back to the topic, I was just sitting there on my couch holding my baby boy, and I saw Liverpool get two more goals, make it 3-0. And I went on to the writer's room and I was like, hey guys, you should check this out. This game is getting interesting. Liverpool, they want to win by 5 or 6 to get a goal difference that can get them into position for the final day. And then everything went to shit.
You did it. You did it.
It was fantastic.
And I'd like to, but before we move on here, I'd like to say the same thing about the Liverpool bloggers that on our network, as I did the Aston Villa bloggers. As much as I shit on Liverpool and Liverpool supporters who defend Luis Suarez and Steven Gerrard, our Liverpool blog is full of not awful people. All of the people that write for Liverpool Offside are really cool, and I like them a lot. Yes. Which is more than I can say for the Liverpool fans that respond to me on Twitter, who are universally awful people.
Not all Liverpool fans.
They hosted an article by me. They were fantastic.
Yeah.
Not all Liverpool fans are awful, but Red and White Cop might be the most disgusting website that isn't explicitly racist or sexist on the internet.
Yeah, and there's, you know, people say, oh, every team has bad fans. Well, yeah, there's Meltdown accounts for, there's like a, I think there's somebody made a We Ain't Got No History Meltdown. Somebody made a Cartilage Free Captain Meltdown.
Yes, somebody.
I know there's a Man United one, and I follow these and I read them, and none of them are as bad as Red and White Cop. And of the, you know, obviously fans of all teams abuse me on Twitter because that's what happens when you write about all teams for a website. You know, people, fans find your shit and abuse you. The Liverpool fans are always the worst. Even worse than Arsenal fans. And Arsenal fans are second worst. Probably not because Arsenal fans are second worst, but because I write for a Tottenham blog. But even though I write for a Tottenham blog, Arsenal fans are second worst to Liverpool fans in the abuse that I get on Twitter.
Well, let me contextualize Liverpool fans this way. I found an American analogy for them that I find is very appropriate. If you combine the entitlement of Yankee fans with the paranoia and victim complex of Red Sox fans into a single fan base, you would have Liverpool.
Yeah, it's incredible.
It's amazing. It's insane. And I get that a lot of it's cultural and comes from Liverpool, the area, kind of being victimized by Thatcher, but which is a legitimate thing that happened, and they have every right to feel that way. But they've sort of sublimated that into their football fan base of the most successful team in English history. And it's just this insane, like, culture that is just crazy and irritating. And
also, while we were shitting on Liverpool, I completely forgot to mention the incident where their press officer threatened a fan and said, "I will have people harass your wife in the streets and leave flaming bags of dog shit on your porch."
Hey, man, justice for Jen Chang.
Jen Chang was always such a smug ass on Twitter before he got that job, too. God, I'm so happy.
He had a weird accent. He was like the English Marcotti.
Actually, I really like Marcotti's accent.
Oh, it's the worst. Have you ever heard him complain about the game Massachusetts
every week,
accent?
And I love it.
Have you ever heard him complain about people speaking in the Massachusetts accent, how it ruins the English language? And I'm just thinking, dude, come on. All right.
Yeah. Well, I really like Gabriel Marcotti.
Of course you would. But we're burying the lead here. The most important thing about the Liverpool game was the Spurs Twitter account after it happened. Whoever was in charge of the Tottenham account clearly has their own Twitter account. And on their own Twitter account, they meant to post a frankly amazing Vine video of Liverpool going from celebration to completely blowing their title and them being laughed at. Accidentally, they clearly posted it to the Tottenham account, and it was hilarious. And
here's
amazing.
The amazing thing is, like, they eventually delete the tweet, and they try to say, like, oh, our official Vine account was compromised. No, that's go look at the Vine that was posted. It's just from some guy.
It's
not from Tottenham Hotspur. It's just some guy.
Some guy logged into the long Hootsuite account or something. Like, and just say that. Like, you can still fire him if you feel like you need to.
Yeah, like, just say, like, somebody meant to tweet something from their personal account and made a mistake and tweeted it from Tottenham Hotspur.
That said.
And they've been shit canned.
I am surprised someone who would tweet such a hilarious video would also be responsible for the sort of bland mayonnaise that we get out of the Tottenham Twitter account all season.
Yeah, it can't be the same. Like, it's got to be, like, some intern who's, like, you know, doesn't tweet from it that often, right?
It's got to be. Can we hire, like, whoever handles, like, PSG's account as our Twitter guy next year? Like, all that Chelsea trolling they did was awesome. God save the Queen, but not Chelsea. Come on. Like, let's hire that guy. Anyway, whoever that guy was, legend, get him a medal, get him a permanent job. Big fan.
Yeah, the apology was just the lamest thing in the world. So, mini rant here. The worst thing about Heartbleed is not, you know, people's online accounts being compromised.
Oh, good transition, by the way.
Yeah, it's the worst thing about Heartbleed is not people's online accounts being compromised. It's that now, like, all of those fucking assholes who would used to, like, drunk tweet dumb stuff or tweet from the wrong account and be like, oh, hacked, and everyone would go, no, you're full of shit. Like, we know that you were just drunk or hit the wrong button. Like, you didn't get hacked. Stop. And, you know, everybody knew that it was bullshit. Now, when someone's like, we were hacked, it's like, oh, fuck, that's actually reasonable. Like, that might have actually happened. And now we can't call people out when they say hacked, say, no, you're bullshitting. Like, now it's reasonable that they might have been hacked. And I hate that that's a thing, that now people who drunk tweet dumb shit have an out.
Well, thanks, Heartbleed. Hashtag you're welcome.
So let's move on to the commentariat questions. Get some low-hanging fruit here. Let's start with the worst-case scenario. This comes from Sandro's Hard Tackle. What would you prefer, keeping Sherwood or for another season or hiring Allegri?
I mean, I'd probably quit the site and stop following the team either way. I know that sounds like a total, like, plastic fan, but, like, it just wouldn't be worth it.
Michael?
I mean, I haven't followed Allegri super closely. His teams seem boring. His tactics seem unimpressive. He seems like a mediocre manager, which would be depressing if Tottenham hired a mediocre manager. We currently have someone who shouldn't be managing in, like, the championship. I would take Allegri is like and move on.
He's like the more boring, shittier version of AVB.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Like, if AVB's tactics were more boring and he were more tactically inflexible, he'd be Max Allegri.
If that were to happen, I would probably become a serial killer like Hannibal to vent my frustrations.
I mean, so basically what would happen is if either of these things happened, if Tim Sherwood were to retain his job or Max Allegri would get hired, what would happen is my Sundays and Thursdays would be free.
God.
Yeah, but I mean, they'd be free, but I'd just fill them with football in some other way. I'd get super into the Bundesliga or something. I mean,
I'd probably go do something else. Like, I don't know, I'd pretend to have, like, friends or family for once.
Don't get crazy here. God. I've already taken the serial killing. Let's not go any further.
I mean, maybe I'd, like, do shit like, you know, leave my house. I don't know.
This has gotten too out of control, guys. I almost want to shut it down right here.
Yeah, these takes are too hot now.
They are the hottest of all takes. Let's see. Our next question is from Bailout. If Brad Frieder retires next season, who can we get to replace him as our backup keeper?
Well, there's already
or like an older guy like
there's Frieder. Already rumors circulating that we're going to sign David Marshall from Cardiff, which would be a good pickup.
We would keep Aurelio Gomez, who how do you sell that which can never die?
Well, Gomez's contract is finally up.
Yeah, you say that, but will it really be? I mean, is it really up? Will it really ever be up?
It's an eternal rolling contract.
If we look at a picture of the first Tottenham Hotspur squad, won't Aurelio Gomez be in that picture, Jack Nicholson style?
Yeah, from the team photo from 1882.
Yes. Like, Aurelio Gomez is in there. He will always be there as our third keeper, never appearing on game day.
He's in the old-time photo club for contemporary Tottenham Hotspur. Yeah,
so I've got a Gomez story. So the Inter Milan game where Bale scored the hat trick, I didn't watch until the day after because when Gomez got sent off, I turned the game off because I was so angry.
Thanks, Gomez. Jeez. God, I forgot about that. God.
Oh.
Yeah, the Gareth Bale hat trick game, Gomez got sent off to screw us over with just like the worst red card challenge ever. And yeah, I turned the game off.
He was pretty dumb. Best keeper we've ever had, right, Brian? All right, moving on. This comes from Squid Shack. Will Spurs end the Tim Possible dream, A, between the second and third whistle of the Villa match, B, after the post-game interview, C, midnight Sunday, or D, more than 12 hours after the end of the season? Follow-up, how bad will it get if the answer is D? I think D is the answer.
Yeah, I think he's going to get fired on Monday.
Here's the thing about Sherwood. Yep. He has been a servant of the club. By all accounts, Levy really likes him. By all accounts, that was justified until until he got hired as our head coach. I think he's not going to get canned right away. They'll give him a day. They're gonna wait a respectable amount of time before they fire him.
So, sidebar: does Alan Pardew get fired?
No.
Really?
I mean, what's he gonna? I mean, we all think he might actually hire Tim Sherwood if he fires him. Like, No,
I mean, so the question is not like should they fire Alan Pardew, because, you know, obviously it's does Mike Ashley want to eat the whatever the fuck, you know, millions of dollars or pounds remaining on his contract?
All right. Well, that depends on how much Newcastle Brown Ale's had that day.
And on exactly what the content of the contract is, and because of the state of journalism in English sports, we have absolutely no idea what his contract actually is.
I feel like Mike Ashley can throw back a case of Newcastle and a pizza like it's nothing.
Now, the real question is, will Pardew's payoff be in pounds or francs?
pretty sure they use the euro in France, but...
Damn it, Kevin!
it'd be more French if it were Franks, though.
Moving back to the implication of the question, regardless of who our new hire is, I think probably it's going to be one of Pochettino or De Boer, given how De Boer is flirting his flirting with us, how Pochettino seems to be ready to bite our hands off to take the job. How long do you think it's going to be before we have a new manager officially as our coach?
I don't think it's going to take that long, because I assume that both Pochettino and De Boer will want to interview for the job, and that Daniel Levy will want to interview both of them, and that if he offers either of them the job, they're going to take it. I don't think we're going to get an announcement like real dang early, because, you know, he's going to want to interview both of them and consider it. But I wouldn't be surprised if before the start of the World Cup we had a manager.
Oh, I think that's true. The question is, I think it's about 2 weeks, and then I think it's an open secret by about a week and a half.
Yeah, and I assume that, you know, they'll probably both come in for interviews something like next, you know, Thursday, Friday, and by a week from Monday, we'll know who the favorite is.
It'll be interesting. I can't see De Boer not getting it at this point. I think if he wants the job, it's his.
So why don't we talk about this right now real quick, and we get back to other mailbag questions. Is anybody, like, super ultra team De Boer or super ultra team Pochettino? Because I'm fine with either of them, and I'm not totally in love with either. I'm rolling with it.
I'm probably pretty solid team De Boer, just because I like the idea after our last two managers of getting a world-class player in as our new manager.
Mm-hmm.
I think we write off how impressive winning four championships at Ajax in a row has been. I think because the Dutch league is what the Dutch league is, but I still think that's a hell of an accomplishment.
Especially because of how screwed up the board was when he came in.
I was just about to say that. So, you know, he knows how to manage a difficult board, particularly if he's dealing with Cruyff.
Yeah, Cruyff's just a psycho.
Cruyff's a lunatic. So if he can manage Cruyff, he can manage Levy. I think, you know, everyone talks about what a strong hand Levy is. I've said this before. I think something specific happened with him and ABB. As long as, like, that doesn't scare De Boer away, and I don't think it will, you know, because at this point, if it goes wrong at Spurs, you can just blame it on Levy if you're De Boer. I'd like De Boer more. He's got more of a pedigree to me than Pochettino does. But knowing what I've said, Pochettino will probably end up being the better manager.
I'm mostly with Kevin in that I would, you know, I'm happy. Both of these guys seem like the kind of quality hire that Spurs should go after. Both of them seem to, you know their head from their ass, and all of that would be good. I would probably prefer De Boer, both for sort of one, the practical reason that it does seem that getting De Boer would add to our chances of keeping Vertonghen, and the degree to which Vertonghen is better than any of the center backs that we're going to get possibly in this offseason is huge. If we want to really compete next season, having Vertonghen at center back 30, 35 games is, I think, a necessity. And then I think on the sort of on the romantic front, I like the idea of circling back and getting an Ajax Total Football associated person, given the importance of Spurs in sort of the history of Total Football. That I think
and a former Barcelona player as well.
Yep.
Yeah, the romance of De Boer certainly attracts me, and just.
you know, there is that sort of Ajax luster. And I just think young and hungry is where Levy's going to go, even though Pochettino maybe fits that mold. I think De Boer really embodies it. I land more on that camp, but I wouldn't be mad if we got Pochettino instead.
Who has the Bielsa romantic side to him too? So there's romantic
more than Ajax though.
He's going to Marseille though.
Yeah,
that'll be a cute. Oh my God, him and Bielsa's going to a country that was like founded on the worker strike. I mean.
Yeah, this will go over well.
With
a bunch of highly touted young players who have shitty attitudes. This is going to go really well.
I mean, it's going to go well for us, but oh my God. let's see. Can we think of a worse collapse than what Liverpool did the other day?
Well, the Arsenal Newcastle one was great. And I think Milan and Istanbul, obviously.
Yeah, Milan, Istanbul. Newcastle in general.
Oh, that's...
No, 95. Not one game.
But the Newcastle collapse in the 90s when they were 10 points up on United and they lost a couple games and Keegan has his famous rant and then Man United win the title is the greatest collapse in the Premier League era by far.
So,
just in case anybody who's listening to our show is a fairly new fan of English football, you don't know what I'm talking about, you've got to go look this up on YouTube.
Keegan rant.
I'm sure if you just search Kevin Keegan rant, it'll be the first thing. You'll see him talking probably on Sky with Andy Gray. And he's like talking shit about Alex Ferguson. It's excellent.
I saw a picture of some of those anti-Pardew, anti-Ashley protests in Newcastle, and there are a whole bunch of people carrying a banner that said Keegan in. And one of the things I love about Newcastle football is how much every single Newcastle fan loves Kevin Keegan.
After that collapse.
They love him. They will die for him.
Even after that collapse, even after England, I mean,
yep.
Man, that's that. I mean, we're not even that delusional about Hoddle. oh my God. So speaking of weird opinions,
although I'd back Gaza for manager.
No. Oh my God, no.
Would there be a bigger train wreck in the history of football?
Not even. I mean, oh my God. So this comes from Jigified and goes to an interesting aspect of, you know, where we fall as fans. Would you have a problem with the prospect of Bergkamp on the Spurs sidelines if De Boer comes and brings him along? I don't think that'll probably happen. I think it's more likely that he'll be the next coach of Ajax if De Boer comes here. But should it happen, I think it would be great. Bergkamp was a Hoddle fan and thus a Spurs fan when he was a kid. And if we somehow beat Arsenal with him on the sidelines, like, that's just like gifts for months and months. And I'll just love it.
I hope we hire Pat Rice, too, while we're at it.
Oh, God. Just full-on trolling.
Point is, no, I don't care if Dennis Bergkamp's a coach at Tottenham.
Well, it's like, okay, so getting into this a little bit, like, of all those sort of Arsenal players, like, Bergkamp was the least offensive. He was fun to watch, and he wasn't as aggravating as, like, an Henry. Like under no circumstances would I ever want Thierry Henry at Tottenham Hotspur in any capacity.
No, but if you hate Dennis Bergkamp just because you're a Tottenham fan, you take sports way too seriously.
Well, like, I think most people would melt, like, especially once he stopped playing. Like, you could all sort of, you know, we could all learn to forgive and forget with Bergkamp.
He's not fucking Sol Campbell. Like, just... He's a good player. You appreciate him.
Yeah. Yeah, or Adams. He's not Adams either, so.
Yeah. Vieira.
Oh, God. Now I'm getting a scowl.
None of the players that you've mentioned are players who are serious sort of developmental coaching people. I mean, the kind of person who stays in football – goes into management, becomes successful at a place like Ajax. Like, there's already something going on there beyond what your super obnoxious sports hate people have going on.
I mean, they're trying to make Sol Campbell a youth guy at Arsenal, but I don't think that's working very well, which makes me happy.
Didn't he write his autobiography in the third person?
Yeah, that actually got that was the guy on Twitter's mistake. It's still poorly written, but it was like as told to so and so. Like it was as told to a ghostwriter. It was his officially authorized autobiography. It's still a massive wank fest, but the tone of voice is a little less stupid.
The amount of money that someone would have to pay me to consent to do one of those things, it's like, fuck, I don't even know what that amount is. It's probably in the seven figures.
You don't want to write Sol Campbell's autobiography?
No, I mean my own, to like be fucking narcissistic enough, just be like, I'm going to tell my story and put it in a book.
Like you and I'm not actually going to write it.
Money.
And this is when Hearts fans figured out where I live. Well, this has been a messy show. So let's end with a messy question. What's the meaning of life, says Altzen? Also, who dat?
Fuck your American football bullshit.
Is this a Saints reference or a Bengals reference? I can't keep track anymore.
I think that one is, I think who dat is, shit, which one is it?
Who dat is the Saints.
Is who day the Bengals?
Yeah, who day is the Bengals. Anyway, American football is something I grew up with, obviously, because, you know, everybody does. And it's really just kind of the worst thing. Like, as you get older, you realize, like, it's just really, really awful.
Well, the fan base, it's kind of like the worst. It's like if everyone in American football is basically a Man United or a West Ham fan.
Yeah, just the
regardless of what team they support, they behave.
The game experience is awful. Everything that English fans complain about with just like the English football becoming over commercialized and not like the sport they grew up with. It's like they have no idea how good they have it, how much worse the NFL is.
The
NFL kills people, like literally kills people. Just the unbelievable degree of rampant homophobia that still exists in the NFL. It's just awful. Everything about it is horrible.
Did you see when the guy who ran that Enoch Out account a few months ago was talking about how the Premier League could learn something about fan engagement from the Super Bowl?
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. It was just the worst. Because what people don't understand about the NFL and NFL fans is they don't give a shit about their players who aren't the quarterback.
There's
one or two other players they care about. The league, the fans, no one. It is this sort of interchangeable mass of bodies, and everyone imagines that they're either the quarterback or the head coach. No one engages with the like actual play of the game.
That's not entirely true, but the NFL, like the NFL, does not give a flying fuck about their fans, and it's so much worse than the Premier League. It almost staggers.
No, the like blue collar Premier League fans who bitch about, you know, what the game's becoming. The NFL is their nightmare.
Yes.
What the NFL is for real is the worst nightmare of blue collar old school Premier League fans.
And they're right to have that as a nightmare. It's an awful thing.
Because it sucks. Exactly.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
And I like the sport. Like the actual sport is cool, and I enjoy it still. But the NFL as an entity is just abysmal.
The culture around it's pretty ugly. Yep. Well, that was a good final question for a very messy podcast.
Super professional.
We're very professional today.
The whole thing's had a fantastic, like, 64 minutes hate kind of thing going on from Tim Sherwood at the beginning. NFL at the end.
Guys.
I really cannot wait to like be. I'm like super not this person who hates everything, but we just talked about all the things that I hate today.
Well, maybe we can talk about pro wrestling.
I'm very positive.
It's like the complete list of things that I strongly dislike in the world, other than like, you know, pure evil. Just like things that are not pure evil that I strongly dislike. It's like Tim Sherwood, Liverpool, the NFL. It's about the complete list.
Yeah. Well, I'm
like,
glad.
I really don't let's hate say something, shit.
Let's say something super positive that we're excited to experience this summer.
Frank DeBoer.
The World Cup is going to be really fun. I'm really looking forward to it. Even though I'm a fan of the United States and they're almost certainly not going to get out of the group stage, it's going to be a really cool World Cup. We're going to get something that we've never seen before, or somebody who's like a true superstar on the verge of being an all-time legend, or a really good player on the verge of being a superstar. We're going to see some dudes break out. Like, we're going to see Balotelli's either going to go to the next level and become a crazy world beater, or he's going to totally submarine Italy by himself. We could see Messi go ham and win the World Cup in Brazil. We could see Cristiano Ronaldo go ham and carry a mediocre Portugal team by himself. And we're probably going to see some kids that we barely know about, or that only nerds like me, who don't have anything better to do than watch football all day, know about. You know, these guys are going to get introduced to the greater rest of the world, like Thomas Mueller did at the last World Cup. So even though it's not the highest quality of football, and you know, people, and I'm one of these people who will bitch about, like, if you think this is good, you should probably watch the Champions League, which is immeasurably better. It's still going to be a hell of a lot of fun, and even if the quality of play and officiating isn't that great, I'm going to find a way to enjoy it because it's the World Cup.
It's going to be fantastic, and I'm really looking for the World Cup. But since Kevin took that, I'm really excited about sitting down for a whole day while my kid is in daycare and collecting all of the big chance data off of 442 and integrating that into my expected goals.
Nerd.
That's going to be just so positive.
Nerd.
Also, it's also like now permanently nice outside after we've been teased with like the 70 degrees, then snow, then 70 degrees, then snow for a while. It's like actually like permanently drinking outside weather. So looking forward to probably like four times a week over the next, 6 months, drinking on a patio.
When it's 60 degrees and raining next week, I'm coming for you, Kevin.
You know what? 60 degrees and raining is fine. I'll still stand outside and drink.
Oh, my God. Well, that's because you're an alcoholic. And on that note, this has been Wheeler Dealer Radio. I want to thank all of you for joining us, for Kevin McCauley and Michael Statsby. This is Skipjack. Come on, you Spurs.